his hands. They were big now, bigger than his small frame. Piano hands, even though we never played piano. They were scarred, nothing impressive. Dark pink confetti strips of nips and cuts. He caught me looking, held one hand up, pointed a finger at one deep gash. Polo accident. I laughed because I could tell he was already regretting the joke. "Nah, actually, you know what this is?" Ben said. "This is from that bull, Yellow Five. Remember that little bastard?" We had only a small operation, but we still never named our cattle. That was not a good idea. Even as a kid, I had no interest in getting attached to Bossy or Hank or Sweet Bell, because they'd be sent to slaughter as soon as they were big enough. 16 months, that rang out in my head. Once they were a year old, you started tiptoeing around them. You started looking at them sideways with disgust and embarrassment, like a guest in your home who just farted. So instead, we color-tagged them during calving each year, matching cows with their calves. Green 1, red 3, blue 2, sliding out from their mothers onto the dirt floor of the barn. Those feet kicking right away, always trying to get a purchase in the slop. People think of cattle as docile, dumb, but calves? They're kitty curious, playful. And for that reason, I was never allowed in the lot with them, just eyed them through the slats. But I remember Ben, his rubber boots on, trying to sneak, moving slow and deliberate as an astronaut, and then he got near and he might as well have been trying to grab fish. I remember Yellow Five, at least the name, the famous bull calf who'd refused to be castrated. Poor Ben and my mom, day after day trying to get a hold of Yellow Five so they could slit his sack and cut off his nuts, and each day coming to the dinner table as failures, Yellow Five having outplayed them. It was a joke to be told over a ground round the first night, everyone talking to the steak, pretending it was Yellow Five. "You'll be sorry, Yellow Five." By the second night, it was cause for chagrined laughter. And by the fifth, it was grim mouths and silence, a reminder to both Ben and my mom that they weren't good enough. Weak, small, slow, lacking. I'd have never thought of Yellow Five again without Ben reminding me. I wanted to tell him to make a list of things to recall, memories I couldn't pluck out of my brain on my own. "What happened? He bit you?"
"Nah, nothing that dramatic. He pushed me into the fence right when I thought I'd gotten a hold of him, just haunched me to one side, and I fell full on, jammed the back of my hand right onto a nail. It was on a rail Mom had already asked me to fix a good 5 times. So, you know, my fault."
I was trying to think of what to say, something clever, commiserative. I still had no grip on what reactions Ben wanted. And Ben interrupted.
"Nah, screw that. It was goddamn Yellow Five's fault."
He broke into a quick smile, then let his shoulders slump down again. "I remember Devi. She dressed it all up, my cut, put a Band-Aid on it, and then put one of her stickers, those shiny stickers with, like, hearts or whatever, on top of it."
"She loved stickers," I said.
"She put them everywhere, that's for sure."
I took a breath, debated flitting over to some other harmless subject, the weather or something, then didn't.
"Hey, Ben, can I ask you a question?"
He went shark-eyed, tight, and I saw the convict again, a guy used to being on the receiving end, taking question after question and getting attitude when he asked his own. I realized what a decadence it was to refuse to answer a question.
"No thanks, don't want to talk about that. And the worst you get is someone thinks you're rude."
"You know, that night?"
He widened his eyes. Of course he knew the night.
"I remember, I may have been confused about exactly what happened." He was leaning forward now, his arms stiff, huddled over the phone like it was a late-night emergency call. "But one thing I do remember,
Like stake my life on it, remember.
Your light was on.
In your bedroom.
I saw it under the crack in the door, and there was talking in the room.
I trailed off, hoping he'd save me. He let me float, that free-fall few seconds when your feet go loose on ice and you have just enough time to think, oh, I am going to fall.
That's a new one, he finally said.
What's that?
A new question. I didn't think there'd be new questions anymore. Congratulations.
I caught us both sitting in the same posture, one palm on the edge of the table, like we were about to push back from a meal of leftovers. Runner's posture. I remember it from the last time I saw him. Me, 25 or 26, and him wanting money, asking all flirty and sweet at first.
Do you think maybe you could help your old man out, Libby dear?
And me telling him no, straight off, a bat cracking a line drive. Shocking. Humbling.
Well, why not?
He'd snapped, and his shoulders shot back, his arms flipped up, hands on my table, me thinking, why'd I let him sit down, already calculating the time I'd waste, getting him back up.
I snuck out that night, Ben said. I came home. Me and Mom got in another fight.
About Chrissy Cates? He started at that, then let it slide over him.
About Chrissy Cates.
But she believed me. She was completely on my side. That was the great thing about Mom. Even when she was pissed as hell at you, she was on your side. You knew that. In your bones. She believed me. But she was angry and just scared. I'd kept her waiting for, I don't know, 16 hours with no word. I didn't even know what was going on, you know? No cell phones back then. You'd go a whole day and not talk. Not like today, I hear.
So, but...
Right. We just got in a fight. I don't remember if it was exactly Chrissy Cates or that's where it started and went from there. I wish to God I could remember. But anyway, she kind of grounds me. Sends me to my room, and I go there, and after an hour, I'm pissed off again. And I leave the house. Leave the radio on and the lights on, so if she peeks out, she thinks I'm still there. I mean, you know the way she slept. Wasn't like she was going to walk all the way to my room to look in on me. Once she was asleep, she was pretty much asleep.
Ben made it sound like an unbelievable journey, those 30-some steps. But it was true. My mom was useless once she was asleep. She barely even moved. I remember holding tense vigils over her body, convincing myself she was dead, staring till my eyes watered, trying to make out breathing, trying to get even a moan. Nudge her, and she'd flop back into the same position. We all had stories of encountering her on coincidental overlapping visits to the bathroom in the night. Turn the corner to find her peeing on the toilet, robe between her legs, looking through us like we were made of glass.
I just don't know about the sorghum, she'd say. Or, that seed come in yet? And then she'd shuffle past us, back to her room.
Did you tell the police that?
Aw, Libby, come on, come on. This is not how I want this to go.
Did you?
No, I didn't. What difference would it have made? They already knew we had a fight. I tell them we had two. There's no point. I was there maybe an hour. Nothing happened besides that. It was inconsequential. Entirely.
We eyed each other. Who's Deandra? I asked. I could see him try to go even more still. I could see him thinking. The sneaking out may have been true, may not. But I could tell, now he was about to lie. The name Deandra chimed him. I could picture his bones humming. He tilted his head to the right, just a little bit. A funny you ask that, tilt, and caught himself.
Deandra?
He was stalling, trying to figure out exactly what I knew. I gave him a face of slab.
Deandra was a girl at school. Where'd you come up with Deandra?
I found a note she wrote you.
Sounds like she was more than a girl at school.
Huh. Well, she was a crazy girl, I do remember that. She was always writing notes that, you know... She was a girl who wanted people to think she was wild.
I thought you didn't have a girlfriend.
I didn't. Jeez, Libby, how do you go from a note to a girlfriend?
From the note. I tensed up, knowing I was about to be disappointed.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I wish I could say she was my girlfriend. She was just totally out of my league. I don't even remember getting a note from her. Are you sure it had my name on it? And how do you even get a note?
Never mind, I said, removing the phone from my ear so he knew I was leaving.
Libby, hold on, hold on!
No, if you're going to work me like some convict, I don't see the point.
Libby, hold the hell up! I'm sorry, I can't give you the answer I guess you want.
I just want the truth.
And I just want to tell you the truth, but you seem to want... a story. I mean, Christ, here comes my little sister, after all these years, and I think, well, here might be one good thing. One good thing. She sure as hell wasn't helpful 24 goddamn years ago, but hey, I'm over that. I'm so over that the first time I see her, all I am is happy. I mean, there I was in my fucking animal pen, waiting to see you, so nervous like I was going on a date. And I see you, and geez, it's like, maybe this one thing will be okay. Maybe I can have one person from my family still in my life and I won't be so fucking lonely. Because, and I mean, I know you talked to Magda. Believe me, I heard all about that. And so, yeah, I have people who visit me and care about me. But they're not you. They're not anyone who knows me, except as the guy with the... And I was just thinking it'd be so goddamn nice to be able to talk with my sister, who knows me, who knows our family, and knows we were just, like, normal. And we can laugh about goddamn cows. That's it, you know? That's all I'm asking for at this point. Just something as tiny as that. And so I wish I could tell you something that won't make you hate me again.
He dropped his eyes, looking at the reflection of his chest in the glass.
But I can't.
Ben Day, January 2, 1985, 5:58 p.m. Deandra had a little belly. It freaked Ben out, and for weeks now she'd been talking about the quickening. The quickening had happened. The baby was moving. It was a very special, important moment, and so Ben had to put his hand on her stomach all the time and feel the baby kick. He was proud of making the belly, proud of making the baby. The idea of it, at least. But he didn't like to actually touch that area or look at it. The flesh was weird, hard but globby at the same time, like ham gone bad, and touching it was just embarrassing. For weeks, she'd been grabbing his hand and pressing it there, watching his face for a reaction, and then she'd yell at him when he couldn't feel anything. For a while, actually, he'd thought maybe the pregnancy was just one of Deandra's jokes to make him feel dumb. He'd sit there with his hand sweating on that gross mound of skin and think, maybe that rumble, was that it? Was that the baby? Or was that just indigestion? He worried. He worried that if he didn't feel anything, and he hadn't those first weeks after the quickening, that Deandra would yell at him. It's right there. It's like a cannon going off in my womb. How can you not feel it? And he worried that if he finally said he did, that Deandra would blast him with her laugh, that laugh that bowed her at the midsection like she'd been shot, the knee-grabbing laugh that made her gelled hair shake like a tree after an ice storm. Because, of course, she wasn't really pregnant. She was just fucking with him. Didn't he know anything? He had, in fact, looked for signs she may be lying. Those big, bloody maxi pads that his mom always rolled up in the trash, and that always ended up unfurled within a day. Otherwise, he hadn't been sure what to look for, and he wasn't sure if he should ask if it was his. She talked like it was, and that was probably as sure as he'd get. Anyway, in the past month, It was clear she was definitely pregnant, at least if you saw her naked. She still went to school, dressed in those giant baggy sweaters, and she left her jeans unbuttoned and partly unzipped, and the mound got bigger, Deandra holding it and rubbing it in her hands like it was some sort of crystal ball of their fucked-up future. And one day, she grabbed his hand and he felt it. No doubt. That thing was kicking, and all of a sudden he saw the swipe of a little foot move under the surface of Deandra's skin, smooth and fast. "What the hell's wrong with you? You birth cows out there at the farm, don't you? It's just a baby," was Deandra's reaction when he snatched his hand away. She pulled it back and held it there, held his palm on that twitching thing inside her, and he thought, "Calving is damn different than your own real baby." And then he thought, "Let me go, let me go, let me go," as if the thing were going to grab him like some late-night slasher movie and pull him inside her. That's how he pictured it, a thing, not a baby. Maybe it would have helped if they talked about it more. After the quickening, she wouldn't speak to him at all for a few days, and it turned out he was supposed to give her something for the quickening, that you gave pregnant ladies presents to celebrate the quickening, and that her parents had given her a gold bracelet when she got her first period, and that this was like that. So in place of a present, she made him go down on her 10 times, that was the deal, which he thought she probably picked because he didn't really like to do it. The smell made him queasy, especially now, when that whole area seemed used. She didn't seem to like it either. That's why it felt like punishment. Her yelling at him about fingers and pressure and higher. It's higher up, go higher. And finally sighing and grabbing his head hard by the ears and pulling him to the spot she wanted. And him thinking, "You fucking bitch," and wiping her off his mouth when he was done. 8 more to go, you fucking bitch. You want a glass of water, sweetheart? And she'd said, "No, but you do. You smell like pussy," and laughed. Pregnant women were moody. He knew this. But otherwise, Deandra didn't act pregnant. She still smoked and drank, which you weren't supposed to do if you were pregnant, but she said only health nuts gave up all that stuff. Another thing she didn't do. Plan. Deandra didn't even talk much about what they'd do when it was born, when she was born. Deandra had never been to a doctor, but she was sure it was a girl because girls made you sicker, and she'd been sick the first month so bad. But she really didn't say more, reality-wise, than to talk about it as a girl, as an actual girl that would come out of her. He'd wondered at first if she was going to get an abortion. He'd said, "If you have the baby," instead of "when," and she'd completely freaked, and Deandra completely freaking was something he never wanted to see again. She was a handful enough at her most calm. This was like watching a natural disaster. The nails, the crying, the hitting, and her yelling that that was the worst thing anyone had ever said to her, and it's your flesh too. What the hell is wrong with you, you asshole piece of shit? But otherwise, they didn't plan, or couldn't plan, since Deandra's dad would literally kill her if he ever found out she was pregnant outside of marriage. If he ever found out she even did it outside of marriage, he'd kill her. Deandra's parents had only one rule, only one single rule, and that was that she must never, ever let a boy touch her there unless he was her husband. When she turned 16, Deandra's dad had given her a promise ring, a gold ring with a big red stone that looked like a wedding ring, and she wore it on that finger, and it meant a promise to him and to herself that she would remain a virgin till marriage. The whole thing grossed Ben out. Doesn't that seem like you're married to your dad? Deandra said it was a control thing, mostly. This was the one thing her dad had decided to get hung up about, and it was the one thing he asked of her, and goddammit, she'd better do it. She said it made him feel better leaving her alone, unsupervised, unprotected, except for the dogs, for months at a time. It was his one parental thing. My daughter may drink or do drugs, but she is a virgin, and therefore I can't be as fucked up as I seem. This, she said, with tears in her eyes. This, she said, while near her pass-out part of a drunk. She said her dad told her if he ever found out she'd broken the promise, He'd take her out of the house and shoot her in the head. Her dad had been in Vietnam, and he talked like that, and Deandra took it seriously, so she didn't do any planning about the baby. Ben made lists of things they might need, and he bought some hand-me-down baby clothes at a Delphos flea market right near Christmas time. He'd been embarrassed, so he just bought the whole bunch from the woman for $8. It turned out to be undershirts and underwear for a bunch of different ages, lots of roughly undies. The woman kept calling them bloomers, which is fine. Kids need underwear for sure. Ben stored them under his bed, which made him more glad he had the lock. He could picture the girls finding them and stealing whatever fit. So true, he didn't think enough about the kid and what would happen, but Deandra seemed to think even less. "I think we should leave town," Deandra said now. A surprise, the hair still over half her face, Ben's hand still clamped to her belly, the baby scuttering around inside like it had dug tunnels. Deandra turned slightly toward him, one lazy boob lolling on Ben's arm. "I can't hide this much longer. My mom and dad will be home any day now. You sure Michelle doesn't know?" Ben had saved a note from Deandra. It talked about how horny she was and how much sex she wanted from him, even now, and nosy-ass Michelle had found it going through his jacket pockets. The little bitch had blackmailed him, $10 not to tell Mom, and when Ben complained to Deandra, she went ballistic. "Your little fucking sister could tell on us at any moment. You think that's okay? This is on you, Ben. You fucked up." Deandra was paranoid that somehow Michelle would figure out she was pregnant from those two words, "even now," and they'd be undone by a fucking 10-year-old. How perfect. "No, she hasn't mentioned it again." That was a lie. Just yesterday, Michelle caught his eye, shook her hips, and said in a teasy voice, "Hey, Ben, how's your sex life?" She was such a shitty kid. She'd blackmailed him on other things, chores he'd left undone, extra food he'd eaten from the fridge, little stuff. It was always little crappy stuff, like she was there just to remind Ben how cramped his life was. She'd spend the money on jelly donuts. Trey made a loud loogie noise in the other room, and then a thweep spit sound. Ben could picture the yellow phlegm dripping down the sliding glass door, the dogs licking at it. That was something Trey and Deandra did. They hawked loogies at things. Sometimes Trey shot it straight into the air, and the dogs would catch it in their drooly mouths. "It's just body stuff going into another body," Deandra would say. "You've thrown some of your body stuff into my body, and it doesn't seem to bother you none." As the TV got even louder in the den, "Wrap it up, you two, I'm goddamn bored." Ben tried to think of the right thing to say. He sometimes thought he never said anything to Deandra that was just pure talking. It was all verbal elbows and arms, trying to fend off her constant annoyance, say what she wanted to hear. But he loved her. He did love her. And that's what men did for their women. They told them what they wanted to hear and shut up. He'd knocked Deandra up, and now she owned him, and he had to do right by her. He'd have to drop out of school and get a full-time job, which would be fine. Some kid he knew quit last year and worked over near Abilene at the brick factory, got $12,000 a year. Ben couldn't even begin to think how to spend it all. So he'd drop out of school, which was just as well, considering whatever the hell Deandra thought she'd heard about Chrissy Cates. It was weird. At first that made him really nervous, that those rumors were going around, and then part of him got kind of proud. Even though she was a kid, she was one of the cool younger kids. Even some of the high schoolers knew her. The older girls took an interest in her, that pretty, well-bred girl, so it was sort of cool that she had a crush on him, even though she was a kid, and he was sure whatever Deandra had just told him was her usual exaggeration. Hysterical, she sometimes got. "Hey, hello? Try to stay with me. I said I think we have to leave town." "Then we'll leave town." He tried to kiss her, and she pushed him away. "Really? That easy? Where do we go?" How will you support us? I won't have my allowance anymore, you know. You'll have to get a job. I'll get a job then. What about your uncle or cousin or whoever in Wichita? She looked at him like he was crazy. With the sporting goods store? He pushed. You can't work there. You're 15. You can't drive. In fact, I don't even think you can get a real job without your mom's permission. When do you turn 16 again?
July 13th, he said, feeling like he'd just told her he wet himself.
She started crying then.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What are we going to do?
Your cousin can't help?
My uncle will tell my parents. How will that help?
She got up, walking naked, her stomach bulge looking dangerously unsupported, Ben wanting to go stick a hand under there and thinking how much bigger she'd get. She didn't put on any clothes to walk across the hall to the shower, even though Trey could see right down the hallway if he was still sitting on the couch. He heard the guttural sound of the shower twisting on. Conversation over. He wiped himself off with a moldy towel near Deandra's hamper, then squeezed back into his leather pants and striped T-shirt and sat on the edge of the bed, trying to guess what smart-ass comment Trey was going to make when they went back out to the den. In a few minutes, Deandra breezed into the bedroom, wearing a red towel, her hair wet, not looking at him, and sat in front of her dresser with the mirror in it. She squirted her mousse into her palm, a giant dog shit of a pile, and scrunched it into her hair, aiming the blow dryer at each section. Squirt, scrunch, whoosh. Squirt, scrunch, whoosh. He wasn't sure whether he was supposed to leave or not, so he stayed, sitting on the bed still, trying to catch her eye. She poured dark foundation into her palm, the way an artist might pour paint, and swirled it onto her face. Some girls had called her a base face, he heard them, but he liked the way it looked. Tan and smooth, even though her neck sometimes seemed wider, like the vanilla ice cream under the caramel dip. She put on 3 coats of mascara. She always said it took 3. One to darken, one to thicken, and one for drama. Then she started with the lipstick. Undercoat, overcoat, gloss. She caught him looking and stopped, dabbing her lips on little foamy triangles, leaving sticky purple kiss marks on them.
You need to ask Runner for money, she said, looking at him in the mirror.
My dad?
Yeah, he's got money, right?
Trey always buys weed from him. She dropped the towel, went over to her underwear drawer, a thicket of bright lace and satin, and dug around till she pulled out underwear and a bra, hot pink with black lace edges, the kind girls wore in the saloons in westerns.
Are you sure we're talking about the same guy? He said.
My dad does, you know, handyman stuff, labor. He works on farms and stuff.
Deandra rolled her eyes at him, tugging at the back of her bra, her tits overflowing everywhere, over the cups, under the clasps, unwranglable and eggy.
She let the bra go finally, threw it across the room.
Fuck, I need a goddamn fucking bra that fits.
She stood glaring at him, and then her underpants started rolling under themselves, edging away from her stomach, up in her ass crack. None of those sexy underclothes fit. Ben thought first, chubby, and then corrected, pregnant.
Are you serious? You don't know your own dad deals? He sold to me and Trey last week.
She tossed away the underpants, then put on a different bra, an ugly plain bra, and new jeans, pouting about her size. Ben had never bought drugs himself before. He smoked a lot with Trey and Deandra, and whoever had pot in that crowd, and sometimes he chipped in a buck or two. But when he pictured a dealer, he pictured someone with slick hair and jewelry, not his dad in the old Royals baseball cap and the cowboy boots with the big heels and the shirts that looked like they were wilting. Not his dad. Definitely not his dad. And weren't dealers supposed to have money? His dad definitely did not have money. So the whole argument was stupid. And if he was a dealer, and he did have money, he wouldn't give any to Ben. He'd make fun of Ben for asking,
maybe hold a 20 just out of Ben's reach, the way a bully would grab a nerd's notebook, and then he'd laugh and shove it right back in his pants pocket. Runner never had a wallet. He just carried mangled bills in the front of his jeans. And wasn't that enough of a sign he had no cash?
"Trey!"
DeAndre yelled down the hall. She threw on a new sweater with patterns that looked like a geometry experiment, ripped off the tags and tossed them to the floor, then rumbled out of the room. Ben was left staring at the rock posters and the astrology posters. DeAndre was a Scorpio. She took it very seriously. And crystals and books on numerology. All around her mirror were stapled decrepit, dried corsages from dances Ben had not taken her to. They were mostly from this senior back in Hiawatha named Gary, that even Trey said was a prick. Trey, of course, knew him. The corsages unsettled Ben. They looked like organs, with their folds and their twists, their pink and purpleness. They reminded Ben of the stinking globs of meat sitting in his locker right now. A horrible gift DeAndre had left him. Surprise! The girl parts of some animal. DeAndre refusing to say where it came from. She hinted it was from a blood sacrifice she did with Trey. Ben assumed it was just leftover pieces from a biology experiment. She liked to freak him out. When her class did baby pig dissections, she brought him a curlicue tail, thought it was hilarious. It wasn't. It was just nasty. He got up and went to the living room.
"You sorry sack of shit,"
Trey called from the sofa, where he just lit a joint, not taking his eyes off the music video.
"You don't know about your dad? The fuck, dude?"
Trey's bare stomach was almost concave, but rippled, perfect, tan. The opposite of Ben's soft white mouse belly. Trey had balled the shirt DeAndre gave him under his head as a pillow.
"Here, you broke dick dog."
He handed Ben the joint, and Ben took a big pull off it, feeling the back of his head go numb.
"Hey, Ben, how many babies does it take to paint a house?"
Annihilation. There it was back, that word. Ben pictured barbarian hordes busting through the big stone fireplace and swiping Trey's head off with an axe, right in the middle of one of his fucking dead baby jokes, the head rolling over across the dog shit and stopping next to one of DeAndre's black buckle shoes. And then maybe DeAndre dies next. Fuck it all. Ben took another drag, his brain feeling minty, and gave it back to Trey. DeAndre's biggest dog, the white one, glided over to him and stared with no forgiveness in its eyes.
"Depends on how hard you throw them," Trey said. "Why do you put a baby in a blender feet first?"
"I'm serious, Trey," DeAndre said, continuing a conversation Ben wasn't privy to. "He thinks his dad doesn't deal."
"So you can see its reaction.
Hey, Ben, you're smoking your dad's stuff, buddy," Trey said, finally turning to look at him.
"It's crap. Potent, but crap. That's why we know your dad has money. He overcharges, but no one else has any right now. Think he said he got it in Texas. Been to Texas lately?"
Runner had disappeared from Ben's life after Patty gave him the boot. For all Ben knew, he might have gone to Texas for a while. Hell, you can drive to Texas and back in a day if you drive hard, so why not?
"This is cashed," Trey said, in a toke-choke voice. "Anyway, he owes me money, like everyone in this town. They love to make the bet. They never want to pay it off."
"Hey, I didn't even get any," DeAndre pouted. She turned away and started sifting through the cabinets. The basement den had a mini-kitchen, too. Imagine that, needing a separate room for all your junk food. And then cracked open the fridge, got herself a beer, didn't ask Ben if he wanted one. Ben saw the inside of that fridge, which had been packed with food the month before, and now just had beer and a big jar with one single pickle floating in it like a turd.
"You grab me a beer, DeAndre?" he said, pissy.
She cocked her head at him, then handed him hers, went back to the fridge for another.
"So let's go find Runner, and we'll get some pot and get some money," DeAndre said, draping herself next to him on the chair. "And then we can get the hell out of Dodge."
Ben looked at that blue eye,
That bright blue eye. It seemed like Deandra was always looking at him sideways. He never saw both eyes at the same time. And for the first time, he felt really bone-scared. He couldn't even drop out of school without his mom's permission before he turned 16. Much less get a job at the brick plant, or anything that made enough money for Deandra to not hate him, not sigh when he came home at night. And now that's what he saw. Not even that little apartment in Wichita, but some factory near the border, near Oklahoma, where the really cheap work was, where you worked 16 hours a day, worked weekends, and Deandra would be with the baby and she'd hate it. She had no mothering instinct. She'd sleep right through the baby crying. She'd forget to feed it. She'd go out drinking with some guys she met. She always was meeting guys, at the mall or the gas station or the movies, and leave the kid there. What can happen to it? It's a baby. It ain't going nowhere. He could already hear it, him being the bad guy, the poor idiot bad guy who can't provide. Fine, he said, thinking once they left the house they'd lose track of the idea. He almost had. His brain was bundling itself up, getting woolly. He wanted to go home. Trey immediately shot up, jingling his truck keys. I know where to find him. And suddenly they were out in the cold, tromping through the snow and ice, Deandra demanding Ben's arm so she wouldn't fall. Ben thinking, but what if she fell? What if she fell and died, or lost the baby? He'd heard girls at school saying if you ate a lemon a day, you'd have a miscarriage, and had thought about sneaking lemon into Deandra's Diet Cokes, and then realized that was wrong, to do it without her knowing. But what if she fell? But she didn't. They were in Trey's truck with the heater whooshing on them, and Ben was in the back seat as always. It was half a back seat, really. Only a kid could fit on it. So his knees were smashed sideways to his chest. And when he saw a shriveled pinky of a fry on the seat next to him, he popped it in his mouth, and instead of looking to see if anyone saw, he just looked for more. Which meant he was very stoned and very hungry.
Libby Day, now. Back in grade school, my shrinks tried to channel my viciousness into a constructive outlet, so I cut things with scissors. Heavy, cheap fabrics Diane bought by the bolt. I sliced through them with old metal shears going up and down. Hate you, hate you, hate you. The soft growl of the fabric as I sliced it apart, and that perfect last moment, when your thumb is getting sore and your shoulders hurt from hunching and cut, 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 free. The fabric now swaying in two pieces in your hands, a curtain parted. And then what? That's how I felt now. Like I'd been sawing away at something and come to the end and here I was by myself again, in my small house with no job, no family, and I was holding two ends of fabric and didn't know what to do next. Ben was lying. I didn't want this to be true, but it was undeniable. Why lie about a silly high school girlfriend? My thoughts chased themselves like birds trapped in an attic. Maybe Ben was telling the truth, and the note from Deandra really wasn't to him. It was just part of the haphazard flotsam that went with a house full of school kids. Hell, Michelle could have pulled it out of the trash after some senior boy tossed it, a useful bit of garbage for her ongoing petty blackmail. Or maybe Ben knew Deandra, loved Deandra, and was trying to keep it a secret, because Deandra was dead. He'd killed her the same night he killed our family, part of his satanic sacrifices, buried her somewhere out there in that big, flat Kansas farm country. The Ben that frightened me was back in my head. I could picture a campfire, liquor sloshing in a bottle, Deandra from the yearbook with her spiral curls bouncing as she laughed, eyes closed, or sang, her face orange in the fire, and Ben standing behind her, gently raising a shovel, eyes on the crown of her head. Where were the other cult kids? The rest of the pack of Satan worshippers? If there was a ring of pale, slow-eyed teens who'd recruited Ben, where were they? By now I'd read every scrap of information from the trial.
The police had never found anyone involved in Satan worship with Ben. All the wild-haired, pot-smoking devil kids of Kinnickie morphed back to peachy country boys in the days after Ben's arrest. How convenient for them. Two habitual drug users in their early 20s testified that Ben had shown up at some abandoned warehouse, a hangout place, on the day of the murders. They said he screeched like a demon when someone played a Christmas song. They claimed he told them he was going to make a sacrifice. They said he left with a guy named Trey Tipano, who supposedly mutilated cattle and worshipped the devil. Tipano testified he only vaguely knew Ben. He had an alibi for the time of the killings. His dad, Greg Tipano, testified Trey was at home with him in Wamego, more than 60 miles away. So maybe Ben was crazy all by his lonesome. Or maybe he was innocent. Again, the birds in the attic battered around. Crash, thunk, shatter. I had probably sat for hours on the couch, wondering what to do, being shiftless, when I heard the heavy footsteps of my mailman thump up my stairs. My mom always had us bake Christmas cookies for our mailman, but my mailman, or lady, changed every few weeks. No cookies. I had three envelopes offering me credit cards, one bill that belonged to someone named Matt, who lived on a street nowhere near me, and one envelope that looked like dirty laundry. It was so soft and wrinkled. Used. Someone else's name and address had been blacked out with a magic marker, and mine written in the cramped space left below it. Mrs. Libby Day. It was from Runner. I went upstairs to read the letter, sitting on the edge of my bed. Then, as I always do when I get nervy, I smushed myself into a small space, in this case, the spot between my bed and the bedside table, sitting on the floor with my back to the wall. I opened the dirty envelope and pulled out an unwholesome piece of women's stationery, bordered with roses. My father's handwriting swarmed across it, tiny, frenetic, pointy, like 100 spiders had been splattered across the page.
Dear Libby, well, Libby, we sure find ourselves in a strange place after all these years. At least I do. Never thought I'd be this old and tired and by myself. Got cancer. They say only a few months. All right by me. I've been here longer than I deserve anyway. So I was excited to hear from you. Look, I know I was never close with you. I was very young when we had you, and I wasn't the greatest dad, although I tried to provide for you and be close with you when I was able. Your mother made it difficult. I was immature, and she was even more. And then the murders were very hard on me. So there you go. I need to let you know, and please don't lecture me. I know I should have done this before. But between my gambling problems, and I am an alcoholic, I have had trouble facing my demons. I know the real killer of that night, and I know it wasn't Ben. I will tell the truth before I die. If you can send me some money, I would be happy to visit you and tell you more. $500 should work. I look forward to hearing from you. Runner, Dad, Day, 12 Donnerin Road, Burt Nolan Home for Men, Lidgerwood, Oklahoma. P.S. Ask someone what the zip code is, I don't know.
I grabbed the thin neck of my table lamp and hurled the whole thing across the room, the lamp soaring 3 feet until its electrical cord stopped it short and it fell to the floor. I charged at it, yanked it from its socket, and threw it again. It hit the wall, the lampshade bumping off and rolling drunkenly across the floor, the cracked light bulb jutting out the top like a broken tooth.
Fuck you! I screamed.
It was directed toward me as much as my dad. That, at this stage of my life, I was expecting Runner to act correctly was stupid to the point of outrageousness. The letter was just a big, long palm stretching out over the miles, asking for a handout, working me as a mark. I'd pay that $500 and never see Runner again until I wanted more help or answers, and then he'd work me over another time. His daughter. I was going down to Oklahoma. I kicked the wall twice, rattling the windows, and was going for a good third wind-up when the doorbell went off downstairs. I looked outside automatically, but from the second floor I saw only the top of a sycamore tree and the dusky sky. I stood frozen, waiting for the visitor to go away, but the doorbell went again, 5 times in a row, the person on my porch knowing I was home, thanks to my tantrum. I was dressed like my mom in the winter, big, formless sweatshirt, baggy, cheap long johns, thick, itchy socks. I turned to the closet for a second and then decided I didn't care as the doorbell went again. My door has no window in it, so I couldn't get a glimpse of the person. I put the chain on and opened the door a crack to see the back of a head, a mat of tangled, tawny hair, and then Chrissy Cates turned around to face me.
"Those old women over there are kind of rude," she said, and then gave a showboaty wave, the kind I'd given them the week before, the broad fuck-you wave. "I mean, hello? Anyone ever tell them it's not polite to stare?"
I kept looking at her through the chain, feeling like a little old lady myself.
"I got your address from the... when you were at the club," she said, bending down to reach my eye level. "I don't actually have that money for you yet, but I was hoping to talk to you. I can't believe I didn't recognize you that night. I drink way, way too much."
She said it without embarrassment, the way someone would say they have a wheat allergy.
"Your place is really hard to find, and I actually haven't been drinking, but I've just never been good at directions. Like, if I reach a fork in the road and I can take a right or a left, I will choose whichever is wrong. Like, I should just listen to my gut and then do the opposite, but I don't. I don't know why that is."
She kept talking like that, adding a sentence and then another, without asking to be let in, and that was probably why I decided to let her in. She walked in respectfully, hands clasped, the way a well-brought-up girl would, trying to find something to compliment in my run-down place, her eyes finally alighting on the box of lotions by the TV set.
"Oh, I'm a total lotion fiend, too. I have a great pear-scented one I'm really into now, but have you tried udder cream? It's what they used to put on dairy cows, like on their udders, and it's so smooth. You can get it at a drugstore."
I shook my head loosely and offered her coffee, even though I had only a few granules of instant left.
I hate to say it, but you have anything to drink? Long drive."
We both pretended it was the long drive, like 2 hours in a car would make anyone need some liquor. I went to the kitchen and hoped a can of Sprite would appear in the back of the fridge.
"I have gin, but nothing to mix it with," I called out. "Oh, that's okay," she said. "Straight is good."
I had no ice cubes either. I have trouble making myself fill the trays. So I poured us 2 glasses of room-temperature gin and returned to find her loitering near my lotion box. I bet she had a few of the mini bottles jammed in her pockets right now. She was wearing a black pantsuit with a pale pink turtleneck underneath, a painfully aspirational look for a stripper. Let her keep the lotion. I handed her the glass and noticed she'd painted her nails to match her turtleneck, and then noticed her noticing my missing finger.
"Is that from..."
she began, the first time I'd known her to trail off. I nodded.
"So?"
I said, as nicely as I could. She took a breath and then settled herself down on the sofa, her gestures tea party delicate. I sat down next to her, twining my legs around each other and then forcing them to untwine.
"I don't even know how to say this," she started, swallowing some gin.
"Just say it."
"It's just that when I realized who you were, I mean, you came to my house that day."
"I've never been to your house," I said, confused. "I don't even know where you live," I said.
"No, not now. Back then, the day your family was killed, you and your mom came to my house."
I said, squinting my eyes, trying to think. That day hadn't really been that big a deal. I knew Ben was in trouble, but not why or how deeply. My mom had protected us all from her growing panic, but that day, I could remember going with my mom and Diane to look for Ben. Ben was in trouble, and so we went looking for Ben, and I was sitting in the back seat alone, uncrowded, and pleased with myself. I remember my face on fire from the salami Michelle fried. I remember visiting bustling houses, a birthday party my mom thought Ben might be at, or something. I remember eating a donut. We never found Ben.
Never mind, Chrissy interrupted. I just, with everything that's happened, I forgot about you. Could I have a refill?
She held her glass out to me, briskly, as if a long time had lapsed with it empty. I filled it to the brim so she could keep her story going. She took a sip, shivered.
Should we go somewhere? She said.
No, no, tell me what's going on.
I lied to you, she blurted.
Which part?
Ben never molested me.
I didn't think so, I said, again trying to make it gentle.
And he definitely didn't molest any of the other girls.
No, everyone dropped their story but you. She shifted on the sofa, her eyes rolling back toward the right, and I could see her remembering her house, her life, way back when.
The other stuff was true, she said. I was a pretty girl, and we had money, and I was good in school, good at ballet. I always just think if I hadn't told that one stupid lie, that one goddamn lie, if it just hadn't come out of my mouth the first time, my life would be totally different. I'd be like a housewife and have my own ballet studio or something.
She pulled a finger across her belly where I knew her cesarean scar was. You have kids, though, right? I said.
Sorta,
she replied and rolled her eyes. I didn't follow up.
So what happened? How did it start? I asked.
I couldn't figure out the significance of Chrissy's lie, what it had done to us that day. But it felt big, relevant. Ripley, to quote Lyle. If the police wanted to talk to Ben that day because of what Chrissy had said, that had meaning. It had to.
Well, I mean, I had a crush. A big crush. And I know Ben liked me, too. We hung out, in a way, and I'm totally serious here. That wasn't probably right. I mean, I know he was a kid, too, but he was old enough to not have encouraged me. We kissed one day, and it changed everything.
You kissed him?
We kissed.
Like?
Inappropriately. Grown up. In a way I definitely wouldn't want my fifth grade daughter to be kissed by a teenage boy.
I didn't believe her. Go on, I said.
About a week after, I went to a slumber party over Christmas break, and I told the girls about my high school boyfriend, all proud. I made up things we did, sex things, and one of them told her mom, and her mom called my mom. I still remember it, the phone call. I remember my mom talking on the phone and me just waiting in my room for her to come and yell at me. She was always pissed off about something. And she came to my room and she was like, nice. Sweetheart and honey and holding my hand, you know. You can trust me. We'll work this out together. And asking me if Ben had touched me wrong.
And you said, what?
Well, I started out with the kiss, and that was all I was going to say, just the truth. And I told her, and she seemed to move away, like, okay, not that big a deal, no problem. I remember her saying, is that all? Is that all that happened? Like she was disappointed almost. And all of a sudden, I remember she was already standing up, and I just blurted it out. He touched me here. He made me do things. And then she was back.
And then what?
It just kept getting bigger. My mom told my dad when he got home, and he was all, my baby, my poor little girl. and they called the school, and the school sent over, like, a child psychologist. And I remember he was this college guy, and he made it impossible to tell the truth. He wanted to believe I was molested. I frowned at her. I'm serious, because I remember I was going to tell him the truth and have him tell my parents, but he'd ask if Ben made me do things, sexually, and I said no, and he'd, like, be mean about it. You seem like a smart, brave girl. I'm relying on you to tell me what happened. Oh, nothing happened? Gosh, I thought you were braver than that. I was really hoping you'd be brave enough to help me out on this. Maybe you can tell me if at least you remember this sort of touching, or Ben saying this. Do you remember playing a game like this? Can you tell me if you at least remember that? Oh, that's good. I knew you could do it. What a smart, good girl. And I don't know, you're at that age. If a bunch of grown-ups are telling you something or encouraging you, it started to feel real, that Ben had molested me. Because otherwise, why were all these adults trying to get me to say he had? And my parents would be all stern. It's okay to tell the truth. It's okay to tell the truth. And so, you told the lie that they thought was the truth. I was remembering my own shrink after the murders, Dr. Bruner, who always wore blue, my favorite color for our sessions, and who gave me treats when I told him what he wanted to hear. Tell me about seeing Ben with that shotgun, shooting your mother. I know this is so hard for you, Libby, but if you say it aloud, you will help your mom and sisters, and you will help yourself start to heal. Don't bottle it up, Libby. Don't bottle up the truth. You can help us make sure Ben is punished for what he did to your family. I would be a brave little girl and say that I saw Ben chop up my sister and I saw Ben kill my mother. And then I'd get the peanut butter with apricot jelly, my favorite, that Dr. Bruner always brought for me. I think he really believed he was helping. They were trying to make you comfortable. They thought the harder they believed in you, the easier it'd be for you, I said. They were trying to help you, and you were trying to help them. Dr. Bruner gave me a star-shaped pin with the words Super Smart Superstar printed on it after I nailed Ben with my testimony. Yeah, Chrissy said, her eyes going big. This therapist, he helped me, like, visualize, like, entire scenes. We'd act it all out with dolls. And then he started talking to the other girls, girls who never even kissed Ben. And, I mean, it was just a few days that we had made up this entire imaginary world where Ben was a devil worshiper, doing things like killing rabbits and making us eat the insides while he molested us. I mean, it was insane. But it was fun. I know that's horrible, but we girls would get together. One night we had another slumber party, and we were up in the bedroom, sitting in a circle, egging each other on, making up stories bigger and juicier, and... Have you ever played with a Ouija board? When I was a kid. Right, and you know, you all want it to be real. So someone moves the heart thingy a little, and you know someone's moving it, but part of you thinks maybe it's real. It's really a ghost, and no one has to say anything. You just all... kind of know you've agreed to believe. But you've never told the truth. I told it to my parents. That day. The day you came over. The police had been called in. All the girls were at my house. They gave us cake. I mean, cheese. How screwed up is that? My parents said they'd buy me a dang puppy so I would feel better. And then the police left, and the girls left, and the therapist left. And I went up to my room, and I just started crying. And it's like, only then did I realize. Only then did I think. But you said your dad was out searching for Ben. Nah, that's just a little fantasy. She said it and stared across the room again. When I told him, My dad shook me so hard I thought my head would come off. And after those murders, all the girls panicked. Everyone told the truth. We all felt like we'd really summoned the devil, like we made